Okay, don't skip ahead. I'm going to talk to you about climate change. And I know it can get depressing or infuriating, but our show takes a different approach. It's Laura Lynch, and I'm the host of What on Earth, and we're all about solutions and hope. And I promise, no matter how overwhelming climate change might feel, we're with you on the journey to fix this mess. So listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
A vote for humanity to prevail, for life to prevail.
The resolution just voted upon makes it seem as if the war started by itself.
A vote at the United Nations has sparked a dispute. The Security Council adopted a resolution demanding an immediate ceasefire between Israel and Hamas, as well as the release of hostages. It's a message that is unlikely to lead to change, but it has led to a diplomatic flare-up between Israel and its most powerful ally. Welcome to Your World Tonight. I'm Susan Bonner. It's Monday, March 25th, coming up on 6 p.m. Eastern. Also on the podcast,
maybe the security service of Russia needs to start thinking about protecting their countries from real enemies other than, you know, imaginary enemies of Ukraine.
In the wake of the horrific attack in Moscow, Europe looks to increase security and Russia points to Ukraine. It's a call that has been made repeatedly and repeatedly rejected. But today, for the first time after nearly 6 months of war, the United Nations Security Council passed a resolution calling for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza and the release of all hostages. The U.S. has previously sided with Israel and vetoed prior motions. Not today. Sasha Petrusik now on the reaction.
Will those in favor of the draft resolution?
Around the table at the UN Security Council today, there was overwhelming support for a ceasefire, alongside a call for the release of Israeli hostages held by Hamas in Gaza. And for the first time since the war began,
abstention.
The United States abstained, choosing not to use its veto to shield Israel from diplomatic pressure. Palestinian Ambassador Riyad Mansour calls it a turning point.
This must signal the end of this assault of atrocities against our people.
Israel's UN envoy, Gilad Erdan, rejects the non-binding resolution, blasting the Security Council for not denouncing Hamas in the text.
Israel did not start this war, nor did Israel want this war.
Angry with the abstention, Israel canceled some high-level meetings in Washington aimed at looking for ways to avoid an escalation of fighting.
We're kind of perplexed by this.
White House National Security Spokesman John Kirby insists the U.S. did not snub Israel, though there has been a clear rift with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu over rising civilian casualties in Gaza.
It seems like the Prime Minister's office is choosing to create a perception of daylight here when they don't need to do that.
Besides, says Washington, the best way to stop fighting and release hostages is by a negotiated deal through talks in Qatar, where Israel has reportedly made an offer with no response yet from Hamas. In Gaza, there is certainly no ceasefire yet. Intense fighting continues around Al-Shifa Hospital in the south.
This operation isn't over yet.
Israeli Army spokesman Daniel Hagari says hundreds of Hamas fighters were barricaded inside, hiding among patients, making Israel's week-long siege necessary, he says.
Hamas is firing from inside the Shifa emergency room and maternity ward.
Palestinians fleeing the fighting say Israel is the aggressor. It's a day of horror for us, says Maha al-Halabi, whose husband was taken away by Israeli soldiers as the couple was visiting her sick father. She's waiting for news of his release, as all Palestinians wait for the fighting to stop. Sasha Petrusik, CBC News, Toronto.
It's been a day of extreme highs and lows for Donald Trump. A judge is refusing to delay the start of his first criminal trial, while a separate court is giving the former president some badly needed breathing room. The $500 million bond payment that was due today has been lowered significantly, meaning Trump will likely get to hold on to all of his assets. The CBC's Katie Simpson has the details.
This is a witch hunt. It's a hoax. Thank you.
Donald Trump appeared frustrated as he arrived at a New York court for the start of his high-stakes day, expecting major decisions in two separate cases, both his freedom and his finances at risk.
If I were doing poorly, this wouldn't be happening. None of these trials would have been happening. If I wasn't running, they wouldn't be happening. So it's a sad day in our country in many respects.
The former president lashing out after his lawyers were unsuccessful in convincing a judge to delay the start of his first criminal trial. Jury selection will now begin April 15th in the porn star hush money case. Trump is accused of falsifying business records to hide payments to women who claim they had affairs with him as a way to prevent a sex scandal in the final days of the 2016 election. Trump's lawyer, Todd Blanche, says he will try to appeal the start date decision.
We very much believe that starting this trial in April, or even starting this trial at any point before the election, is completely unfair to President Trump. It's completely unfair to the American people who are evaluating who they want to be the next president.
As Trump and his legal team process this historic setback, the first ever criminal trial of a former American president, they were also relieved and celebrated a separate decision. The nearly $500 million bond payment that was due today in Trump's unrelated civil fraud trial was lowered significantly to $175 million.
I have a lot of money. I built a great company.
Trump thanked the appellate court, which made the decision, and says he'll be able to make the payment within the next 10 days. Former U.S. federal prosecutor Jessica Roth says this will spare Trump the embarrassment of having some of his assets seized by New York's attorney general.
The fact that the amount of the bond has been lowered, though, makes it seem much more likely that he will be able to post that bond and that she would not proceed with those measures.
If Trump was unable to come up with the money, some of his bank accounts and possibly his iconic properties, including Trump Tower in New York City, could have been seized. Trump's re-election team is already using this dramatic day to raise money for his campaign. One of his fundraising emails included a highlighted headline, "Trump Tower remains mine," and right below it, a link to chip in. Katie Simpson, CBC News, Washington.
Fears of another deadly attack like Friday's horrific assault in Moscow has led at least two European nations to ramp up security. At least 139 people were killed after gunmen opened fire in a concert hall in the Russian capital. Islamic State claimed responsibility. But today, Russian President Vladimir Putin was still trying to link the carnage to Ukraine while allowing the world to see what his security forces are willing to do to suspects. Briar Stewart reports.
As each of the four alleged gunmen were brought into court, their faces told the story of their arrest and what happened during the interrogations afterwards. They were badly beaten and bruised. One appeared non-responsive as he was wheeled into court. Today, for the first time, Russian President Vladimir Putin called the attackers radical Islamists, but suggested Ukraine could have still played a role. This atrocity may be just a link in a whole series of attempts by those who've been at war with our country since 2014, he said. Putin previously said that the four gunmen were arrested on their way to Ukraine. Ukraine has fiercely denied it has anything to do with the attack, and the U.S. calls Russia's allegations its latest propaganda.
They're trying their best to link all what happened to Ukraine.
Vera Miranova is an associate fellow with the Davis Center for Russian and Eurasian Studies at Harvard University.
I mean, maybe the security service of Russia need to start thinking about protecting their countries from real enemies other than, you know, imaginary enemies of Ukraine.
The group ISIS Khorasan, or ISIS-K, has claimed responsibility for the attack. It's an offshoot of Islamic State based in Afghanistan and an opponent to the Taliban. It carried out a suicide bombing at the Kabul airport in 2021. More recently, staging attacks in Iran and Turkey. Germany says it stopped an ISIS-K plan to attack a cathedral on New Year's. And today, France's President Emmanuel Macron said police there had foiled attacks by the same group in recent months. We have offered to increase cooperation with Russia's intelligence services and our partners in the region, said Macron. France has now raised its security alert to the highest level, and it's recruiting more soldiers for its anti-terrorism unit. Italy, too, has stepped up security ahead of Easter.
We are seeing an upscaling by ISIS.
Sajjan Gohel is a terrorism expert and the international security director for the London-based Asia-Pacific Foundation.
Well, with the expansion of ISIS-K, they have been increasingly trying to tap into communities in Central Asia, but also Central Asian communities in Russia.
Russia has said that all four of the suspected gunmen are foreign nationals from Tajikistan, and that three other suspects were charged today with being complicit in the attack. Briar Stewart, CBC News, London.
Coming up on the podcast, Ottawa's plan to get Canadians out of Haiti. Alberta launches several investigations into the mistreatment of six seniors who were unsafely discharged from hospital, and an examination of the trans athlete debate. The evacuation of Canadian citizens has started from Haiti. Violence in the country is spiraling. Gangs now control the nation's primary airport. Canada has organized helicopter flights to help Canadians make their way to neighboring Dominican Republic. Tom Perry has the latest from Ottawa.
On the streets of Haiti's capital, yet another grim scene. Video shot in just the past few days shows police removing charred bodies from a busy street. The latest casualties in the seemingly never-ending violence between Haitian authorities and well-armed criminal gangs.
We know that the situation in Haiti has been deteriorating.
Foreign Affairs Minister Melanie Joly says Canada is moving to evacuate by helicopter its most vulnerable citizens, people with children or medical conditions.
The closest place to go quickly through our helicopter capacity that we have right now in Haiti is the Dominican Republic, and that is why we're doing so through the Dominican Republic. But
the numbers so far are small. Joly says 18 Canadians were evacuated today. Fewer than 300 people have asked about assistance getting out, but less than 100 of those are eligible, and fewer than 30 say they can leave immediately. The Dominican Republic is only allowing individuals holding valid Canadian passports to enter its territory. Joly says Canada is actively looking at other countries in the region that might be less restrictive in the interest of keeping families together.
It is Canada's priority. It's just my personal priority not to separate families, and that's why we'll be coming up with new options.
Joly says the government is also talking to allies like the U.S. and France that are evacuating their citizens from Haiti. In Washington today, State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller said the U.S. has so far managed to ferry more than 340 of its citizens out of Haiti by helicopter.
That includes approximately 250 U.S. citizens who have departed Port-au-Prince, and another 100 that have departed through Cap Haitien. We continue to pursue to explore other alternatives to evacuate American citizens from Haiti, but I don't have anything further to announce today.
Melanie Joly says Canadians in Haiti will need to make their own way to the assembly point where the helicopter flights are being organized. That in itself will be a challenge given the chaos in the streets. Once in the Dominican Republic, Canadians will need to make their own way home, though they will at least be safe. Tom Perry, CBC News, Ottawa.
The Alberta government is launching four separate investigations into a nonprofit social services company after the organization moved 27 residents under its care into hotels and then failed to pay the bills. Some had just been discharged from hospital and still needed care. Now government officials are reviewing the company's licensing and accreditation. Paula Duhacek has that story.
I was very concerned.
Chris Semkin's nephew Dallas was one of roughly two dozen vulnerable people briefly at risk of being sent to an Edmonton homeless shelter. Dallas has autism and was receiving care from Contentment Social Services, which was housing clients in hotel rooms. But after the organization failed to pay its bills, there was talk of eviction and sending the residents to a homeless shelter.
He wouldn't be safe in a place like that. He's not capable to take care of himself, defend himself.
Clearly, I think Albertans expect us to be able to make sure somebody's advertising that they're a service provider, that they really are.
Alberta Social Services Minister Jason Nixon says the province has launched four separate investigations into the matter.
A bunch of trumped up internal investigations is not going to solve the problem here.
But Alberta opposition NDP leader Rachel Notley says the situation begs further questions about the role of private contractors in the healthcare system and just how many people have ended up in situations like this one.
We need a clear commitment by this government that all people currently being transitioned from acute care in the hospital, out of that hospital, who have been forced into motels or hotels, will be identified and then placed in more suitable settings. Because we don't know how many there are yet. We only know about this one group.
Health Minister Adriana LaGrange has emphasized Contentment was not an official continuing care provider contracted by the government.
Obviously, they are not a good service provider.
But LaGrange said in some cases it was given as an option to people being discharged from hospital. The province says it's now looking at how to regulate services like this one that fall into a gray area.
Well, the government really ought to have known that there were these providers in the community.
Lorianne Hardcastle is an associate professor of law and medicine at the University of Calgary.
They ought to have been aware of this. Safe discharge from hospital is something that should be high on the priority list of government. And in particular, with the reorganization of the healthcare system that's going to see government taking a greater role in integrating health services between continuing care and between acute care.
As for Chris Semkin, he just wants to know this situation won't happen again.
Right, there was a people at risk here. I didn't really care who made the mistake as far as in the government. Let's fix it. Let's move forward.
When reached by phone, Norton Smith, who's listed as the president of Contentment Social Services, said he had no comment on the investigations. Paula Duhacek, CBC News, Calgary.
It is a sign of just how much trouble Boeing is in. Today, the storied American aircraft manufacturer announced some big changes at the top. Several top executives out of a job, including Boeing's CEO, after a litany of serious safety problems. Kyle Bax has details.
Turbulence at Boeing hits the head office. David Calhoun took the top job 4 years ago when Boeing was last in crisis. He now heads for the exit door amid another. After a door plug blew off an Alaskan Air jet during a flight 2 months ago, the Boeing chief executive announcing he's leaving later this year.
We have another mountain to climb.
And he's not alone. The chairman of the board is also leaving, and the head of Boeing's commercial aircraft business is stepping down immediately. American regulators recently found multiple safety concerns in the manufacturing plant, the company's stock jumping a few percent on news of the broad management shakeup.
Let's not avoid what happened with Alaska Air. Let's not avoid the call for action. Let's not avoid the changes that we have to make in our factory. And we will get through that.
Calhoun became CEO in 2020 after the 737 MAX planes were grounded following two deadly crashes. This clear-out comes as airlines around the world have become more frustrated and outspoken about Boeing's safety and production problems. Carsten Spohr with German airline Lufthansa says he's furious.
I am. Safety is everything.
Guy Carlson with Norwegian Air.
There's no doubt that they have to sort out their issues, and their issues is massively public.
Airline CEOs took the unusual step of demanding a meeting with Boeing's board of directors, not the CEO.
In other words, they went over his head because they didn't feel that the CEO could or would address their problems. So that tells you how serious this is.
Ian Lee is a business professor at Carleton University. In Boeing's attempt to improve safety standards, production of new aircraft has slowed, resulting in fewer new planes for airlines wanting to expand and add new routes for passengers.
When you have the buyers, the biggest and most important buyers, including Southwest, going to the board and saying, you have a problem and you're not solving it and you've got to fix it right now, then Houston, we have a problem. And they had a huge problem.
Lee says CEOs get paid big bucks to fix big problems, and the company's failure to do that so far meant change at the top was inevitable, and more fallout is likely until Boeing gets through the turbulence. Kyle Bax, CBC News, Calgary.
The U.S. and U.K. have imposed sanctions on hackers linked to the Chinese government. The countries, along with New Zealand, are accusing the group of working as a front for Beijing's top spy agency. They say China conducted large-scale cyber attacks on Britain's Electoral Commission in 2021 and has targeted lawmakers who've been critical of Beijing. The U.K.'s Deputy Prime Minister, Oliver Dowden, announced the sanctions in Parliament today.
Any targeting of members of this House by foreign state actors is completely unacceptable. These actions demonstrate a clear and persistent pattern of behaviour that signals hostile intent from China.
China says the accusations are completely fabricated and malicious slanders. Calgary musicians Tegan and Sarah took the opportunity of being in the spotlight at the Junos last night to speak out against Alberta Premier Danielle Smith and her proposed policies around trans people, including the plan to ban trans athletes from competing in women's sport. As Julia Wong reports, the evidence remains mixed as to what advantage trans athletes might have.
Hurry, hurry, set, hut.
Aria McGowan feels at home on the football field. The trans athlete is quarterback of the Edmonton Storm, a women's tackle football team.
For me, it's the best team sport there is out there.
But football may look different in the future. Alberta Premier Danielle Smith is proposing to ban trans girls and women from competing in athletic competitions against girls and women.
Being told I'm not allowed to would really suck. I don't know, it's just a lot of emotions.
Last month, Smith explained why she wants to see this ban.
There are some sports where the physical differences make a difference. And so in those cases, we do want to have biological women, women who are born biologically female, have the choice of being able to participate in a biological female-only category.
If passed, Alberta would be the first in Canada with this type of ban. But it's already prevalent south of the border. More than 20 U.S. states have similar laws.
We need to protect the female category.
And Selena Soule took the issue to court. The former U.S. high school athlete says she missed out on qualifying events and medals because of two transgender athletes.
It was a very frustrating and demoralizing thing to have to go through because we elite female athletes trained so hard to shave fractions of a second off of our times to win.
Dr. Brad Annewalt is an endocrinologist and professor of medicine at the University of Washington. He says limited data shows there are some differences after a person begins hormone therapy.
What happens is that you arrive at muscle mass and strength that's somewhere in between cis women and cis men on average. Other important things that really will never change are things like hand size or feet size. And that's important in sports like swimming.
But more research is needed about whether there is a competitive advantage. And questions of fairness are complicated, he says.
And again, it can't be resolved by science. It has to be resolved by society. But by trying to include everybody, we inevitably have to exclude somebody.
J.J. Wright is a professor of gender and women's studies at McEwen University. Wright says for some, the category of woman is important to define, but that can often lead to discrimination of another kind.
That there's parameters to womanhood, and some people don't fit into that. When they don't, they are policed.
Right? Everyone's got good hands.
Back on the football field, McGowan wants people to play as the gender they identify with.
Just being told you can't do something is, it makes you think there's something wrong with you, when there's not.
Legislation for this and other proposed trans policies is expected in the fall. Julia Wong, CBC News, Edmonton.
And finally tonight.
And the award for TikTok Juno Fan Choice goes to...
Karen Ajla!
Joining the likes of Shania Twain, Avril Lavigne, Shawn Mendes, Justin Bieber, and Michael Bublé is Karan Ajla. At last night's Junos, the Surrey BC musician won the Juno Fan Choice Award, the only category at the Canadian Music Awards voted on by listeners. Earlier in the night, he performed live on stage with the help of Toronto's Icky Ikwinder Singh. Ajla's win surprised many. It's a reflection of the increasing popularity of Punjabi Canadian pop music. And for Ajla, a memorable moment and an opportunity to recognize where he started from and where he's landed.
You know, sometimes I just can't believe I'm that same kid that lost his parents when he was in India. Made my way out to Canada, this beautiful country. And today I'm here, man. Let's go! I just want to end by saying this. If you're dreaming, make sure you dream big.
And that's been Your World Tonight for March 25th. I'm Susan Bonner. Talk to you again.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.